Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Well, Super Bowl week is here, and we have quite the lineup. Not a huge lineup, but we had Mina Kimes last week, so that was great to get her insight into this. So go download and check that out if you have not. But coming up next is Bill Barnwell, who does a fantastic job for us. You might see him on TV as well with the SVP often, but he's been here on the pod. He did prop bets, I think, each of the last couple of years. Just a wonderful guy and also wonderful insight. And he just approached this year's column basically reinforcing kind of like what I always say about why the NFL is so tough. It's that there's just new kind of approaches these coaches scheme up and create. And that's why it's just so hard to use like past projections moving forward. I just think he did a wonderful job of kind of anticipating how each defensive coordinator will scheme these high profile quarterbacks and Patrick Mahomes. And also obviously Tom Brady playing in his 10th Super Bowl, which is just outrageous when you really think about it. So Barnwell's coming up. And of course, John Murray is. We're going to get some interesting takes about what props have seen sharp action and also what props the book is positioning itself to need, which is basically, you know, the sharps behind the counter. What do they think is going to happen? So some interesting stuff there. I'll go through some props as well. And then we'll wrap things up like we always do with Baby Bankroll Bonanza. And a lot of pressure on this because we each have a lot of props. And he obviously has the Prince of Props to chime in as well. I just want to remind everyone, for Bill, obviously he hosts the Bill Barnwell Show, so go check out that podcast. I also joined Pablo Torre with ESPN Daily, so I encourage you to go to check that out. Obviously, Pablo does a wonderful job on a daily basis, but it was fun. We had a lot of fun. I tried to share some insight on like the history of prop bets, the popularity, the growing popularity as state legalization continues to expand. We're at 20 states plus DC, so 21 jurisdictions. But Pablo had was very curious about the Gatorade because that is legal in a few states. The Gatorade color you can bet on. And Indiana has some crazy props as well. And then also the doink, the hitting the upright or crossbar, you can actually bet on that at some popular books, and Pablo wanted to discuss that. So I had some fun there. And also it's a lot of fun with Radio Row this week. So thanks to all those radio stations that listened to this podcast. Had a lot of positive feedback from everyone throughout the week. So I enjoy that and had a blast. So thanks to everyone, and let's get to it. And before we get into today's episode, I want to quickly remind you that since it's Super Week, make sure you tune into KJZ on ESPN Radio weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern. KJZ brings you the insights of former Super Bowl champion Keyshawn Johnson, along with co-hosts Jay Williams and Zubin Mehenti. KJZ is also available as a podcast after each show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go pick me out a winner, Bobby.
Time now for what's becoming, and I hope it continues down the road, a Super Bowl tradition here on the podcast, and that is the NFL writer extraordinaire of ESPN.com, Bill Barnwell. How are you, Bill?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Thank you so much for taking the time to join. I know how crazy this week is. It's certainly been for me. But look, you dive deep all the time, and you just did one on ESPN.com right now. I encourage everyone to go read it on the Super Bowl preview, so to speak. And you do it from a way that I basically have been saying is why it's so hard betting the NFL. It's you just can't use past performance and just the nature of football being a week apart and how advanced it has become with analytics and these coaching staff so elaborate and video. They're just trying to throw curveballs all the time to the opposing team. And that's why you can only do so much kind of predictive approach. And you attack sort of like how you anticipate the defensive coordinators to kind of counteract each offense. So just take me through that.
Yeah. I mean, these are two really smart guys in Todd Bowles and Steve Spagnuolo, two very creative guys, two guys where, you know, maybe there are certain coaches where I would even say Bruce Arians is like this a little bit, where like they're going to do what they want to do. And historically, when you look at them week after week, they don't change their game plan all that much based on what they're going to see from the defensive side of the ball. But with Spagnuolo, with Bowles, it can be very different. Todd Bowles, even this postseason, we've seen him play a man heavy, pressure heavy, get in your face, press coverage, matchup against the Saints because he didn't think Drew Brees can throw downfield, which turned out to be correct. Against Aaron Rodgers, we saw more two-man, safer coverages, rush four, try and beat the Packers front four, which worked against the Packers. So, you know, I mean, that can change dramatically from week to week. And we saw earlier this season, even in the course of that game, the Bucs-Chiefs game, Todd Bowles in the first half played a lot of cover one, a lot of man, a lot of cover one, single high safety in the middle of the field. And what that led to was Tyreek Hill torching them down both sidelines for big play after big play. And of course, Todd Bowles is not a stupid man. He changed up his game plan, didn't want Tyreek Hill to set a single season or a single game receiving record. And the adjustments worked. I mean, that game was close at the end, even though Tyreek Hill got 269-3. So I do think these are two coaches where, given 2 weeks, given the game they had earlier this year, given the amount of time they have, they are going to change what they do, or at least customize what they do for the opposing offense. And I think that can inform a lot of the decisions we make about how we want to approach this game, what we think is going to happen, how you're going to bet on this game, what the player props mean. I mean, so many things come into play, but you sort of have to make a prediction, not a prediction about the game itself, but a prediction about how these teams are going to approach it. And I think I have an idea. I'm not 100% sure. I've been wrong before, but I have been right before as well. And I feel like I have an idea of how each team might approach this one.
So basically what you're incorporating is the 2 weeks off, the copycat nature of the NFL, as we hear so often. And it's pretty obvious. Like, do you want to copy and emulate a defense that got torched by Mahomes or one that played pretty well? It's
right.
You know, you're following the breadcrumbs, but certain breadcrumbs are certainly bigger than others. And I imagine there's going to be some fluidity to this as well. You mentioned in the Green Bay, the KC, that they changed a little bit mid game. And I would imagine, and I'm curious, and let's start with the Patriots, because look, it's a trend and some trends are nonsense, but I think some of it is inherent with just the nature of the game. So Brady not having any touchdown passes in nine previous first quarters, any touchdowns drives, just 3 points. And I wonder if it's, you know, usually you're facing a good defense in the Super Bowl and there's some mid-game adjustments, and Brady's so smart, especially later in the career as he evolved past maybe then like the first couple Super Bowls, and just sort of like figuring things out. And, you know, it's the ultimate like Belichickian way is to like throw curveballs and invent defenses like he famously did against the Kelly Gunn offense is the DC for the Giants. So in terms of Brady on offense, how are you anticipating Spags to kind of counteract him? Because obviously they know each other from their Giants Patriots days.
They sure do. This is several revenge scenarios here in this game, which I love. And that is maybe the biggest one is Stu Spagnuolo and Tom Brady. I will say that I think the Bucs are going to get the ball first in this game. I know the line, or I think some of the props have moved that way. Given that the Chiefs are very likely to defer the Bucs typically, can kind of go back and forth, but Buccaneers are most likely to have the ball in the game first. So that could be an extra possession, which might be meaningful. But I think one of the reasons Brady struggled in the first quarter in years past has been the fact that he really struggles against pressure. He's two different guys when he is being pressured and when he's not being pressured. And I think he's like sixth in the NFL this year when he's not pressured in QBR. And then either he was 31st during the regular season, it'd be like 28th or so now.
Wow.
When he's not pressured, just a different guy. And so one of the reasons why I think he struggles early in games is that the pass rush is going. I mean, everyone's hyped. You're peaked all year. You have a ton of energy. You're not tired. There's nothing to fool you. So I do think that could happen again here, but we've seen as games have gone on in the past, the Falcons game comes to mind where they played a ton of snaps on defense and they gassed out in the fourth quarter in overtime. You saw Brady come back against the Seahawks. Another game where Brady came back after Cliff Averill, one of the Seahawks' best pass rushers, got hurt. I think he got a concussion and left that game maybe midway through the third quarter. The Seahawks were much worse on defense. Patriots much better on offense from that point forward. So I think Brady is a guy where, you know, for the Chiefs, some of it's going to be the game script. Some of it's going to be how their two key players, Frank Clark and Chris Jones, play against the two weaker parts of the Bucs offensive line in Donovan Smith and Aaron Stinney. But I do think it comes down to, you know, hey, are the Chiefs having long drives? Is their defense fresh? Because if it's not fresh, I do think Brady will have some success against them in the second half of this game.
And the adjustments, like things he'll see, I would imagine defenses can't really like practice for 2 weeks, like three different defenses, right? Like they're trying to drill in like one game plan. Not that they're incapable of adjusting to like something they're already familiar with, but I imagine just like Brady at the line. Like I always said, Peyton Manning with that second Super Bowl, his arm was kind of shot and that's why he retired. But like, let's not dismiss him. I mean, quarterbacking is so advanced that give these guys credit for plays they didn't run, like they audibled out of. It's just not as simple as like making the throw and not making the throw. It's such an advanced game. And obviously there's coaches and stuff like that, but Manning, I think, probably did a great job. And there's so much stuff that we don't know happened that he did.
100%.
Things along 100%. Those lines. So I think Brady, you know, when we see these veteran quarterbacks like Rivers, Rodgers, Brady, Big Ben, all these guys get to the playoffs, there's a reason for that. It's not just like coincidence. Mm-hmm. It's knowledge they've gained throughout the course of their career. So, and just refresh me, you said KC's going to get ball first or Tampa?
Tampa, I think, is going to get the ball first. Will.
Okay.
KC typically defers. And so if they win the cost toss, you figure they're going to defer. The Bucks more 50-50, but obviously, you know, no, if you assume it's a 50-50 coin flip, which I'm hoping it is, it kind of throws off a lot of our expectations. If it's not, you would figure that the Bucks are going to get the ball first, probably about 65-70% of the time.
And I'm glad you mentioned the Brady QBR with pressure and not with pressure, because Preston Johnson, who's been on this pod and is on our show all the time, he brought up this stat and it was just mind boggling. He was like laughing about it. So Mahomes, not pressured, is like tops with QBR and under pressure is second best. Yep. That is just that in a nutshell crystallizes Mahomes' kind of greatness already so early in his career. So just, you know, maybe take me through what you anticipate Bowles doing to counteract this high-powered offense.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I think this is the more interesting matchup of the two, maybe, because I feel like, you know, there's so many different ways you can try to stop Mahomes and almost none of them work. You know, I think they have to rush four. Bowles is typically a very heavy blitz guy, wants to mix things up, is willing to play cover zero with no safeties and just play man across the field. That's not going to work. That is playing with fire if you are Todd Bowles. So I think this could be very similar to what we saw against the Packers. Man two, drop seven guys into coverage. You know, try and trick Mahomes a little bit. Try and slow down his processing. Maybe you spin a safety up or spin a safety around. You maybe switch from cover two to cover three or cover two to cover six at the last second. Try to slow him down and then hope that your front four gets home against a Chiefs offensive line that we know is beat up. Right. I mean, Eric Fisher, the left tackle's not playing. Mitchell Schwartz, their right tackle's not playing. They have backups on the interior. I mean, this is a very mediocre offensive line that, you know, because Andy Reid is a genius, because Patrick Mahomes is a genius, they're able to sort of overcome those issues. But Bucks were a great front four, and that is a opportunity that for most of the game last year, with a better offensive line at the time with Fisher and Schwartz around, the Niners were able to exploit and slow down the Chiefs. So you would figure Todd Bowles' first plan is going to be, hey, if I can get home with four and I can drop seven, great, we're good. We don't have to worry about anything else. If that doesn't work and the Chiefs get ahead early, then I think you start mixing in blitzes. Then I think you get a little riskier. And then maybe you see more of the shots downfield, more of the big plays, because there are more opportunities for that. Very similar to what we saw in the Bills game, where the Bills were very conservative at first. Mahomes just picked apart their zones. And then in the second half, they had to try stuff. They had to rush. They had to blitz. And then we saw Tyreek Hill get going with big plays. We saw them getting more opportunities downfield.
You mentioned a couple things I want to follow up on. Let's start with the offensive line. But because this is 2 weeks off and there's one game, this is getting a lot of pub. We don't hear this discussed that much during the regular season because casual recreational bettors don't really appreciate the O-line stuff. But just how big of a setback is this? Like, how much would it be if it weren't Mahomes? Like, to kind of like offset the deficiencies of scrambling or whatnot. I mean, to me, it sounds like it's a huge thing.
Enormous, enormous. But again, this is the greatest offensive mind in the league. It's the greatest quarterback in the league, and they overcome it. We saw in the game last year, Patrick Mahomes, you know, was getting beat up, getting hit a ton. They picked up a big play because Patrick Mahomes dropped 11 yards backwards or 11 steps backwards and ran a third and 15 play for a first down, and that changed the game. And that is something that, you know, Tom Brady's not dropping 11 step backwards. Phillip Rivers, as smart as he is not dropping 11 steps back on a play. It just doesn't happen. So that helps. And I think we saw with the Browns game, where that was a big mismatch with Mike Remmers, their backup right tackle, who's now their starting left tackle, was up against Myles Garrett. And if the Browns were going to win that game, it was going to be because Myles Garrett had a big impact. And they did a ton of jet sweeps, a ton of those tap passes early, a lot of moving across the formation horizontally to slow down the rush, to have Myles Garrett say, okay, I have to worry about a guy running past me. I might not even be blocked on the play because Mecole Hardman or Tyreek Hill have a, you know, 5 yard head start and they're running past me horizontally. I'm not going to be able to catch them. We saw Myles Garrett make a play on Mecole Hardman. That was incredible, but it was 40 yards downfield. That's an opportunity Andy Reid's going to take every time. So I think, you know, with a lesser quarterback, lesser coach, I'd be very concerned. But here, I think Andy Reid is going to have ways to manipulate those defensive ends, manipulate that pressure, where if they are getting trouble, if they are getting to Mahomes early, there will be solutions. There will be ideas they can come up with. And I think we'll see some of that early in that game to slow down the pass rush before it even gets started.
So the other part of that is I want to evolve it is when you said Andy Reid is a genius. And I love that you said that because I really don't think people truly appreciate how achieved and accomplished he is. Like I talked to Tim Hasselbeck after the Monday. So we did a show Monday after the Super Bowl a year ago. And he just is like, you know, we're talking just, you know, taking off our microphones or whatever. And he's just like, I mean, think about what Andy Reid has done with all these quarterbacks. He's taken them all to the playoffs. I mean, from, you know, Jeff Garcia to Alex Smith to all these guys. And he's never had like a Brady until now. And look what he's doing with Mahomes. So I just think that people, because Belichick has just overshadowed this generation of coaches, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But Andy Reid is really like the offensive Belichick, and he finally got a guy who could do his system, and he is kind of the X factor in all this.
I mean, it's the most cliche thing, right? Like, you know, that sort of Andy Reid's record after a bye. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know what the number is anymore, but it was undefeated for a while. It was like 18-1 for a while.
Yes, right.
So it's still pretty good. Like, I don't remember exactly what it is anymore, but you know, this is technically a bye week. And I think we've seen, hey, when Andy Reid gets time to prepare, when he has, you know, that sort of extra time to get in some extra wrinkles, extra practice time, he is going to show you stuff you've never seen before that works for his team. It's not just like, you know, anybody can mix in a gimmick play here and there, but I think getting it to work in the context of your offense and getting it to work where you're getting your best players in a position to succeed goes a long way. And this is not a perfect team. It's not a perfect offense. The line is struggling. The running game is not all that great, but it works because Andy Reid gets the most out of the players he has, and he gets the most out of their stars. I mean, Tyreek Hill is incredible. He's not just the deep threat. He's so much more than that in this offense. Travis Kelce is such a valuable player at tight end, even, you know, to an extent that I think anyone else in football would not get more out of Travis Kelce than Andy Reid has over the past few years. Even the secondary guys, your Mecole Hardmans, your Sammy Watkins, your DeMarcus Robinsons, and the running backs. I mean, they all have a role to play. And I think Andy Reid really maximizes all of those roles. And that can be tough from week to week in terms of evaluating, you know, who's going to get the ball. But I do think that it's such a useful thing for that offense. And I think it's so hard to stop because there's just not one thing you can stop or one player you can stop.
No, I agree. And we've become so extreme with our, like, I think Kobe almost ruined it all. He's like, it's all about championships. And Derek Jeter, you know, like, so it's like anybody who doesn't win championships and it's all about the rings kind of like taints our like perception. But what Andy Reid with all those trips to the NFC title game, and obviously mm-hmm. won last year, but to finally get over the hump. But okay, so we've digested that. Let's get into some props, rip through some. Obviously, you've done all this prep work, so you obviously prop bets are such a big part of the fabric of the game. I want to talk about like the most things that you kind of just jumped out to you when you were looking at some of the odds here.
Yeah. I mean, I did pick the Chiefs as a spoiler. So I'm leaning towards the Chiefs here. There's some that come to mind just because I think it makes sense, you know, in terms of the math, looking at the props that were posted by William Hill here. Simple one for me that came to mind. First play of scrimmage will not result in a first down at -240. Not exactly a fun prop. Like doing math is not exciting. No one's going to get thrilled about the first play of scrimmage, not going for a first down. But again, I talked about Tampa Bay getting the ball first. The implied probability here at -240, 70.6%. The Chiefs, look at them in first and 10 in the first quarter during the season. They did not get a first down on their first play 68.3% of the time. The Bucs were at 89%. So that's a combined rate of about 78%, way above our implied probability. And we lean Tampa Bay to start first. So that goes a long way for me in terms of being a prop that has some value. Patrick Mahomes, sorry.
Yeah, you want to like take an easy approach. You don't want to chuck it deep, incomplete, then you're second and 10 and already behind the sticks. Like you just kind of want to like ease into it, right? With all the nerves in the stage. That
right.
makes sense too.
We've seen the Bucs just hand it off to Leonard Fournette for four yards over and over again on the first play of the game. So assuming they're getting the ball first, I mean, they're not down 7-0. I think that's where they'll probably go again this week. One that came to mind for me on a player side, there's a couple that came to mind for on a player side, but one of them that really stood out to me was Byron Pringle. And I know I just talked about the Chiefs finding opportunities for all their players. It's tough to hit five or six different wide receivers in the same week. You might have two tight ends, you might have two running backs, might have four wide receivers, but Byron Pringle this year has one catch all season in a game where Sammy Watkins is active. Sammy Watkins is expected to play on Sunday. Byron Pringle is His line is 18 and a half receiving yards. He might catch a screen, might catch a little stick pass here and there. I don't think he's going to be a big part of this offense. I have under 18 and a half there. Feel pretty good about that one. Mecole Hardman, I mentioned that I think he's going to be a part of the game, stretching the field horizontally and then vertically. His rushing attempts were over a half at plus 160. I think this is a game where he could play, have an impact as a runner. It might be on a tap pass as opposed to a jet sweep, but I think having the plus 160 there feels pretty good. So I was inclined to go over a half there. And then I think on the flip side, in general, I'm over on the Bucs receptions. I figure they're going to have to throw to win this game. I think it's going to be a game where they are behind and they have to throw. So I'm over on Tom Brady reception or Tom Brady completions, I should say, sorry, over 25 and a half. Mike Evans, who is such a big target for them on blitzes where they will throw him the ball and sort of hope he can figure something out on 50-50 balls, on fades, on screens. Mike Evans over 4.5 at minus 110. Scotty Miller over 1.5 at minus 140. I think a guy who is going to be part of the attack because they're going to want to have speed. They're going to want to challenge the Chiefs because the Chiefs historically, and not only against the Bucs earlier this year, but also in general, really trust their cornerbacks. They're going to blitz six, maybe even seven guys, play cover zero, and sort of dare you to hit throws downfield. And Scotty Miller is a much better part of the offense when it comes to being a downfield threat than Antonio Brown right now. So I figure Scotty Miller feels good right there. Trying to think anything else. Maybe Cam Brate. This is a team that Cam Brate is almost always used as a receiver. I could see them using 12 personnel to try and force the Chiefs out of their preferred alignment in nickel, playing more base defense. And Cameron Brate scoring a touchdown is plus 300, which I liked quite a bit. Scoring at any point during the game.
Right. Any point touchdown. Right. That's awesome. So that you went through a lot of interesting stuff. So you Chiefs minus three, you kind of lean there. You're like, you know, Brady's the GOAT. I think it was like your line and said, but this is Mahomes' era.
Yes.
How much, this is sort of like a narrative I don't want to necessarily go on record with. And I like saying that as I go on record, but like, are the Bucs caught a few breaks here in the playoffs? Like they don't feel like that team in the past that we've seen that have like got hot late mm-hmm. and like made a run. I feel like they got to face a 7-9 Washington team.
Sure.
And they got to face an injured quarterback that really their defense saved them because Brady's three touchdown drives were 40 yards or less.
Yes.
And then obviously they made the right plays and played well against Green Bay, and Roger just missed some throws, frankly. So I feel like their defense is good, like yep. really good. Maybe not great, but good. And like, but it's like the whole like, oh, you don't want to bet against Brady. It's like, really? Like, has it been this great? Like, I know he's awesome, and I know he can play great. But like, I just feel like it's a little extreme with this Brady love thing.
Do you know, I don't, because I'm asking you, do you know what Brady's record against the spread is in the Super Bowl?
It's all been like one score games. I think it's like 5-4 or something like
that. I mean, it's not like he's been unstoppable. I mean, it's not like he's been there and we've been saying, oh man, you know, Tom Brady's 9-1 against the spread in the Super Bowl. Like, you know, I wouldn't fault anybody. It's not like I'm sitting here saying, oh, the Bucs have no chance. I would even, you know, I feel pretty comfortable taking the three. I would feel comfortable at 3.5. I mean, I don't think it's going to rise much higher than that, but you know, if this had come out at 6, I would have bet the Bucks. I mean,
right.
That would have been the right value. I absolutely see what you're saying. Their hot run late in the season was against a pretty weak schedule.
Totally.
Like so
Detroit and like, you know, they did play okay. The Vikings blew field goals and stuff. Like the Vikings were in sure. that. I think I hate win loss records. I just think like Brady played amazing against the Eagles in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago and got a loss
yep.
and was like so average against the Rams and got a win. I think coaches and Matt. So it's just like so much of like Brady's win loss. I mean, his other stuff's incredible. Right. But I just the whole don't bet against Brady stuff, but the O-line stuff is the only thing that scares me. If the O-line was intact for the Chiefs, I'd be hammering KC.
Yeah.
But I am a little apprehensive there. And, you know, just the health, but you know, the safety situation with the Bucks.
Yeah.
Is any long shot plays, whether it be MVP. I mean, I know you said Hardman could have a big game. I mean, it's so hard to go against these quarterbacks, but we've had two defensive players in the last 7 years win defensive MVP. But any long shot plays, like not like overtime or anything like that, but stuff like that, anything like big payouts.
Yeah, I like Sammy Watkins, 200-1.
Yeah, there's been some sharp money actually on Watkins on everything, like receiving yards, yeah. MVP, everything.
I'm not part of the sharp money, to be clear. I just want to put that on the record as well.
Well, I'm saying great minds think alike is my
point. Yeah, right. I'll take it. you know, I just we have to think about it from the range of outcomes for Sammy Watkins. We know Sammy Watkins is totally comfortable having a game where he's not even a part of the game plan. That is not out of the question. Not even a guarantee he's even going to play
right
in this game. But look at his track record. I know it's a 5-game playoff sample, 3 of 5 games, 98 yards or more. So we know Patrick Mahomes is comfortable throwing to the guy. It's not like he doesn't trust the guy in the playoffs in key situations. We know week 1 of 2019, as a Sammy Watkins fantasy owner that year, he had 198 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, and we know it from the Bucs game earlier this year, Tyreek Hill went for 269 and 3. Like, it's not as if Sammy Watkins has one big play, the Bucs are going to turn off their defense and not do anything. They're going to give them opportunity to make more big plays. So, you know, so Sammy Watkins get a 2-touchdown game. Is that enough to get him in? I'm skeptical, but like that's within his range of outcomes for this game. And it's not, you know, it's not likely, but is it a 2% chance or a 3% chance? Yeah. Relative to it, you know, what the odds were, 200 to 1. I'd be interested in that. So if I'm going to go with a long shot, if I'm picking the Chiefs, I think that's the place I'd want to go.
Yeah, one of my props that I like, it's also fun to root for, is Mahomes' longest completion over 39 and a half.
Yep.
Just because of all that speed, like if Watkins plays, then you got Watkins, Hartman, and Tyreek Hill. Like at some point, those guys are going to get behind a defender. If not, it's a bubble screen and those guys make a couple guys miss. I mean, Tyreek Hill's like advantage is he can reach top speed in about 3 steps.
Yes.
That's his thing. He's explosive out of like standing still. Mm. So I just think, like, they can't stop all these guys for an entire game. And if they can't run against this front, then they're going to be throwing a lot, put the ball in Mahomes' hand. And, you know, I just like that one. It's fun to root for, like I said. What about, I have Brady's first touchdown pass under 12 and a half yards. So he's thrown 47 TDs this year. A lot of them in the playoffs have gone deep, actually. But of the 47, only 18 have been from 13 yards out or higher. So a lot of, like, around the goal line to break, things like that. Do you like that play?
Yeah, I do. I think Brady makes sense. I think Gronk makes sense. You know, they could hit a long shot. I think we're going to see a lot of deep throws from them against blitzes and, you know, maybe hit one of those for a long score. We saw it with Scotty Miller last week, but that's not typically what they do. It's not typically how they score, to my knowledge. I believe that they are a team that, you know, they're going to get in the red zone. They're going to get within the, you know, even if they hit a big play, no guarantee it goes for a touchdown too. They might hit a big play to the 5 or 10 yard line.
Right.
They don't have a lot of burners on this team. It's a lot of guys who catch 50-50 balls, the guys who, you know, are going to physically sort of push you away to make catches. So, you know, absolutely could see that makes sense to me. I think the tight ends are a very good play here. It's definitely the weaker part of the Chiefs in coverage. And I see them being, again, a lot of 12 personnel in this game for Tampa Bay.
Okay. Awesome, man. Well, look, everyone I know loves your work, including myself, and really appreciate your coming on and breaking down a lot of this game from really start to finish. So it's been really interesting. And Bill, thank you, man.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Kicking is for losers.
The gambling holiday that is Super Bowl Sunday is days away. So we had to bring in Mr. Executive Director John Murray. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. You know, it's a busy week, a lot of media obligations for people like you and myself, and the bets are starting to roll in. Today being Thursday, it's finally starting to pick up a little bit, and we're just constantly, I'm just sitting back here watching my bet ticker, and just every bet we take is on the Super Bowl. So many different betting options here at the Westgate Superbook. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what's so fascinating about this year, obviously, with the travel restrictions and even just the capacity restrictions. And money being tight in this economy with COVID. And I just wonder if you're going to have that influx of public money that you anticipate every year and frankly, like set the odds for, because the public dictates the market, whether it's props or whatever, in the Super Bowl than in any other game, right? So like, how do you anticipate what happens over the coming weekend when there's such a giant unknown there?
Well, you've got to deal with all the things you just mentioned. You also have to deal with capacity restrictions. So we don't know. Like on Saturday and Sunday, we'll be pushing capacity, and we got to make sure that we keep our guests safe, socially distanced from each other, underneath the occupancy restrictions set by the government. So that could impact handle too. And when you think about what kind of action you're going to get on the quote unquote public sides, normally you've got a pretty good idea of how much it's going to be. And this year, you really don't know. You really don't know how many people are going to be coming out here for this weekend. How many of them are going to be allowed in the room at the same time, and how much they're going to be willing to bet on all these different props. I mean, in the past, you'd have people betting $5, $10, $20 on literally 100 different prop bets. And I don't know how many people are going to do that this year.
Yeah, no, and just kind of going to have to monitor things and adjust accordingly. But people who have been involved for about a week now are the Sharps, since you guys posted the full slate of options on the betting menu about a week ago, or, you know, Thursday night last week.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, what has been the most intriguing kind of action from the respected money?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. We did that on Thursday night, last Thursday night. I think one of the ones we really got hit on a lot was they bet Kansas City team rushing yards against Tampa Bay team rushing yards. And they took Kansas City plus 14.5, 13.5, 12.5, 10.5, all the way down to 4.5. We since moved it back up a little bit to 7.5. You know, we were kind of looking for those bets because we're not anticipating Kansas City running the ball very much. We know that they know how good Tampa Bay is against the run, and we know that they have the best quarterback in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes. And we booked a lot of our props to kind of fade Kansas City's ground game, so to speak. If Kansas City has a very good game on the ground, that'll be bad for us at the Westgate in terms of the way we booked props.
Yeah, I've been hearing that sort of sentiment as well throughout, that there is and I think other books had a different sort of spread, so it might have been just middles for that.
It might have been. So it definitely was. You're absolutely right. And then one important thing to remember when you hear, if you hear any interviews this week from somebody that's on my side of the counter, if he says, oh, we saw sharp stuff on this, that, or the other thing, it's very possible that all that was people scalping, middling, arbitrage players. And those sharp bets, while they are sharp and they are coming from respected players, they might be exactly what the book is looking for. And I can give you a couple more that we took that we were looking for those bets. We were booking to get somebody to bet that with us and scalp us to another book in Las Vegas.
And what are those?
Chiefs to have a rushing touchdown. Again, on that same storyline where we don't think Kansas City is going to run the ball that effectively. They've bet that one from minus 140 to minus 175. Also, Chiefs first half rushing touchdown. They bet that one from 2-1 down to plus 160. And also, Mecole Hardman, over 2.5 catches from plus 160 down to plus 110. So these are bets we were kind of looking for. We wanted to get bets like that, and we got them. You can really shape the decisions how you want, especially in this age of phone accounts. We can see what every other book in the city has and every other book in New Jersey or whatever other state you want to use has, and we can sculpt our decisions the way we want them, shape them to those other numbers.
It's fascinating. It's totally interesting on that front. So those are positions you wanted, and you're kind of like using the scalpers to your advantage. What about the ones that you weren't like inviting and you were kind of, you know, surprised that the Sharps are taking a position here?
I'll give you a one that surprised me yesterday. A very respected guy, I think very highly of, he actually took the time to come down here and get full limits at the counter. And this is a guy that almost exclusively plays on the mobile app. And the reason it caught my eye was because he was playing a cross sport one, which you don't see too many sharp guys play those. He bet Joel Embiid -2.5 points versus Tampa Bay Buccaneers points. Joel Embiid points against the Brooklyn Nets on Saturday night, Sixers Nets game. And you just don't see that very often. Those, what do you call those, cross sport parlays are really more for entertainment. And we really don't normally get our sharper, more respected players getting involved in those. So that one definitely caught my eye a little bit.
So clearly that's Embiid facing the team with the worst defensive rating in the Nets. And did his other action mirror like maybe Tampa not doing well the Super Bowl, like other props unders?
No, that was the only thing he bet. He came in, he made one bet, and then he left. And I thought, because that's a great follow-up question. Was that just part of what he was here to do? Was he here to bet a bunch of stuff? No. He came in to bet that one prop for our limit, which is 2,000, and then he hit the road. So I found kind of interesting.
So that was more like Embiid specific than it was Super Bowl specific.
I think it was Nets defense specific.
Right.
I think you already nailed it on the head. I think it was like, I'm watching this Brooklyn defense or lack of defense, and I'm going to come down there. I'm going to nail the Westgate on it.
So my question for you on some of these cross sport, and I have a question for even past Super Bowls. I wonder if it makes sense financially just to bet when it's ever a player versus a team, to especially like yards, to just take the team. Like, for example, Kelsey has a prop versus the New York Knicks points against the Heat on Sunday. Now, I actually put in the chalk column that I like Kelsey because I expect him to have a big game. But my point is this. The range and the variance is so much wider with a player's performance than it is a team's performance. Right. Like Kelsey could get hurt after the first quarter. He could have 50 yards receiving. The Bucs just, you know, double team him or whatever. But like the Knicks aren't going to score 50 points or 40 points, whatever it is, you know, like the Knicks will be above 80 and below 120. Right. So I just wonder if it's almost like makes more sense just to hit the team on all of those, thinking just variance of production of a player.
I mean, that makes sense because you're definitely right about the fact that there's way more variance in terms of what the player could do. I can just, the only thing I can really tell you from our perspective is I don't see our most respected guys doing that.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that it's not a good idea. It just maybe means that you're the first one to think of it.
Well, you could have variance, but you could also have, I mean, there's no real edge per se. You're right. That's much more for entertainment purposes and marketing and all that, but it is interesting stuff. I mean, there's some really creative ones out there. What, anything else stand out from behind the counter there?
Well, one thing that we've been doing here is we've been booking to need kickoff returns under. Our risk guys, when they were setting these numbers and we were going through all the numbers last week, they found that these two kickers or kickoff guys are both players that kick a lot of touchbacks. And we've been intentionally booking to need that kickoff returns under, because we're thinking there's going to be a lot of touchbacks in this game. And we've been taking bets against other books around town that we set ourselves up with a pretty big position on that prop.
It's funny. I texted someone in our beautiful city who's in the media as well. I'm like, you got any good props you're hearing on your interviews and stuff like that? Because I like to collaborate, as you know. That's sort of what I say I do the most, the aggregator. He's like, yeah. He goes, I'm betting no touchback on the opening kickoff plus 240, 17-2 in the last 19 years.
Wow. Well, we're rooting against that individual.
Right, but you factor in nerves, and then in this case, weather and rain is in the forecast. Yeah. I mean, I think the nerves thing is interesting. Now, I know we got to break it down, but the ambiance and the atmosphere will be different with not a full stadium, and even the hoopla for the full week. I mean, it adds a layer to like the nerves, right? When you're doing Super Bowl media day is crazy, and not having it this year, I think, makes things feel more normal, right? The Bucks being at home probably makes things feel more normal. So I imagine there's an element of some normalcy that are just not the tightness that we've seen in past, at least the beginning of the Super Bowl.
And Kansas City was in the game last season.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady is in the Super Bowl basically every other year. So if there was ever a Super Bowl where there's not that tightness, I think it'd be Super Bowl 55. There's a lot of guys playing on Sunday that are very experienced in this game. Probably more so than I can even remember. It's the last two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks are the two quarterbacks in this game.
Good point. So I have a prop bet, and I've talked with some people, and I've discussed it on air, and I think we're going to do a big treatment on it on Friday. And I'm torn because the juice is minus 340. But I also think it's like the dumbest odds. I think it should be like minus 600 or 700. The longest made field goal. Now there's alternate lines for this. The 54.5, the under is minus 340. So basically there will not be a field goal of at least 55 yards made in the game. And I just don't like, okay, first of all, Tampa Bay's kicker suck up is accurate, had a good year, but he doesn't make bombs. Like he's not a distance kicker. They don't even try him. And so Butker does have the leg and accuracy and he's solid, but he's only made two this entire season. And they were really weird situations. Like one was in overtime where after a penalty on the kick, then they had to go back to 58. Like, I feel like the Chiefs can get any yards they need. You know, if it's short of the yard to gain kind of thing for a first down. And the other one was when they got a first and down at the 37 yard line and then had three straight incompletions. So they had to kick it 4th and 10. Like otherwise, like they're getting the yard. So it's a little bit of sweat anytime the offense crosses the 50. But I just feel these teams are going to go for it. I don't think Tampa's going to kick much. Like I just – minus 340. And frankly
– the only scary times would be the end of the first half and the end of the game if they needed a field goal in those scenarios. Because I agree with you. Tampa Bay must know that they're not going to win this game kicking field goals. They must know that. And these are two very smart coaches. I don't see them trotting out their kickers for very long kicks. Unless there was some sort of a bizarre scenario, like we saw it in the AFC Championship game where Buffalo, I think they got called for a personal foul penalty.
Right.
And it made it a 4th and 28. So they figured, what the hell, let's kick the field goal, right? They would not have done that on 4th and 8, but it was 4th and 28. So it kind of made some sense to just kick the field goal. I'm always for props that are anti-kicking field goals. So I like your bet.
Well, that's I wanted to discuss with you. But I did have a friend who's a pro bettor in town. I told him about it like Monday or last week. And he texted me last night. He's like, by the way, where did you find that? And I told him it was Will Hill. And he's like, and he told me, he goes, I found one out. And he wouldn't tell me where because he was afraid I'd tell other people. That has the 55-yard or longer field goal made at 11-1. So there's a scalp right there. I think 11-1 is ridiculous, but I thought it should be like minus 600 plus 400, you know, one of those kind of things. So it just shows you if there's an 11-1 out there, minus 340 is probably good value.
Well, we saw a prop that our guys liked where you could bet what will there be more of in the game, touchdowns or field goals. And that prop was opened at minus 440 on the touchdown side. We thought that price should have been north of minus 1,000, excuse me. Because who's going to kick field goals? I think if you put up that prop, you need to use touchdowns minus a half. Because this way, to lose that bet, you would actually need there to be more field goals than touchdowns. Even if somehow there were as many field goals as there are touchdowns, you'd still just get your money back. So we thought, you know, nobody ever likes to lay $4, $5. I mean, you're talking to a guy that laid $5.50 on no safety in the Denver-Seattle game and then watched in horror as the first play of the game was a safety. But sometimes laying those no prices, while it can be a little uncomfortable, it's some of the best value you'll get in this game. Because the public is all taking these big pluses, and they're giving you good value on the no.
Yeah, I know. I liked Brady minus 250 not to score a rushing touchdown, and now it's up to 440. He's only at 4 all year. We know he's the master of the sneak, but it doesn't always happen on the goal line. But at minus 440, I'm not playing it. But it is fun to see the juice. Any other significant moves on the juice before we move on?
Well, the one I was going to touch on where you've got to kind of hold your nose to play it is really the Patrick Mahomes score touchdown. We've taken – right now we've got no minus $4, yes plus 330. We've taken 88 bets on that prop, and 87 of them have been on the yes. So I would say that – I'd say Patrick Mahomes to not score a touchdown minus $4 is a very good bet. You've got to consider the fact that this guy got knocked out of the divisional playoff game against the Cleveland Browns running an option play. You would think that Kansas City would be cautious about designed runs. That doesn't mean it's impossible that he could run one in himself on a scramble. You know, this book got crushed 3 years ago on the Philly special on a touchdown pass to Nick Foles, where that was one of our biggest prop losses I can ever remember at the Westgate Superbook. But I would argue that no minus $4 there is a good bet. Famous last words there.
No, I'm right there with you, the famous last words. I've talked about this field goal thing, and you just know Bucker's going to kick a bomb. Split the
uprights. Yeah, he just bombs a 60-yarder before halftime.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, I have the 11-1 elsewhere kind of thing to fall back on. Like, hey, odds makers are throwing 11-1 up there on the S. So you guys have some – are you guys sweating Kansas City future, like the Tampa futures like everyone else is? Bookmakers I've talked to are kind of rooting for the Chiefs here.
You know what? I want to say our guys did a really good job in that week, the week before the conference championship games. They sold a lot of bets on the Chiefs, on the Packers, on the Bills to win the Super Bowl. And it really got down that big liability we had on the Buccaneers. We lowered it pretty drastically. We are still pretty big losers to the Buccaneers, but not nearly as much as we were. And there's a lot of money on the Chiefs being bet here over the counter on the game. I don't think that the game itself, the winner of the game, is going to go that far to determine how we do on the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be more to do with the total. Everybody's betting the over. It's about 88% of the money on the over. And then, you know, the props are about 55% of our business on the Super Bowl. So the top executives here at the Westgate, they ask me what we're rooting for on Sunday. And I just say we're rooting for the game to be boring. We just don't want anything to happen. We want a boring game. We don't want to see 5, 6, 7, 8 different guys score a touchdown. As long as the game is relatively boring, we'll do very well regardless of the winner.
That's funny. No, I know a lot of people, just because of the odds, like the Chiefs were the favorites, so any big futures are not going to set any books back too much. But like the Chiefs, I mean, we did a story on Daily Wager, and Purdom did it, just a guy with, you know, all those money at 60-1 and 50-1. That's pretty outrageous. He's already cashed the NFC ticket, so... some nice tickets to have. And it's so rare these futures come in with odds makers being on top of everything, but that's what happens.
We mocked those Tampa Bay bets. Not that particular bet, but we mocked people betting Tampa Bay right before the season started. And all I can say is, you know, my hat's off to those guys that bet the Buccaneers. They talk about nailing a future bet. Predicted that they would get Tom Brady and then predicted that they would end up in the Super Bowl. That's about one of the all-time most nailed future bets that I've ever seen. So good for them.
Yeah, no, for sure. And look, things had to break their way in the playoffs even, right? I think they were 7-5 at one point this season.
Well, they didn't even win their division. So you're talking about having to win three road playoff games. I know one of those games was against the Redskins, which was like a cartoon of a team, but they had to win in New Orleans and in Green Bay, and they did it. So it's very impressive. Very impressive.
For sure. Okay, so Murray, it's come to the home stretch here. We got to do bonanza in a little bit. You ready?
I'm always ready.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, the pressure is on. Hats off to Darren for phrasing. He goes, I'm going to make the guys look good with the standings. Doug holds a $2,925 lead over Vegas Murray, and that's because I went big on the Packers in the NFC title game, so I was in the black, a decent size in the black, but now I'm small in the red. So still have my lead, Mr. Executive Director. Have you touched base with the Prince of Props?
You know, I did, and he was very what's the word I'm looking for? He's very emotional. He said his exact words were, I got to get in the lab and I got to study and I got to make sure I bury DK this weekend. And he said, let Doug know I'm bringing a duffel bag to the counter this weekend and we're going to be firing pretty heavy on props. And then I had to get back to work. So I said, yeah, do whatever you're doing. Fine. Do whatever you're doing. Get in the lab.
Well, I did Radio Row this week virtually, so I had about 3 hours of hits on Tuesday morning in addition to other radio hits throughout the week, given the Super Bowl popularity of betting. And one of the radio hosts, I forget which part of the country, was a very big fan of the podcast and touted you and said you do a great job. And he mentioned the Prince of Props, and I was like, wait, I just want you to know, no offense, man, like, he gave himself that nickname. He's not like the, we don't go to him as like the Bible and like the, you know.
No, like, but can I defend him a little? Can I defend him a little bit? Because I think he gave himself that nickname when we were under the influence at a bar in Old Town Alexandria the night before Thanksgiving a few years ago. A bar that I believe it's called the Fish Market. So he was having a little fun, and he hasn't had that much fun this year on his prop bets. I'll tell you that much.
Well, no, I just didn't want anyone to like run with the run to the bank or run to the book with all these picks that we were about to do on the segment. I was like, hey, just you know, it's a kind of a lighthearted nickname and a lot of fun.
Very lighthearted. Maybe too lighthearted. Maybe we should get him a more serious nickname.
That's an option. So for another day. Okay, Murray. So this will dictate your lovely niece's gifts. And who gets who's going to get the option of dishing it? my question for you is, do you want to go first? How do you want to? It sounds like you're going to wait till the prince gets to the lab. So you're going to have some plays over the weekend. I don't want any funny business manipulating the market here.
No, I want to make a couple prop bets of my own. And then I don't really like anything on the side, on the total, on the money line. You know, it's kind of, those numbers are kind of all where I think they should be personally, but I'm going to go with our team here. I'll just use the Westgate number because I don't feel like looking in through all the apps right now, but I'm going to go with our Westgate team here and I'm going to go play under 3.5 kickoff returns. That's between the Chiefs and the Buccaneers, under 3.5 minus 140. I'll play that for 1400 to win 1000.
All right. That's what I'm talking about. So I did consult my own Prince of Props, if you will, earlier in the podcast. Bill Barnwell was the other guest here, and he had some ones that really caught my attention. So I'm excited to lay it. But I'll start with my field goal prop because it's my favorite. So I'm going to go 6,800 to win two dimes, under 54.5 for the longest field goal made.
I like that. I'm actually putting
my money where my mouth is.
That puts me in a funny position too, where I've got to root for a long field goal. And, you know, that'll be weird for me, but I'm going to do one more because I see the way it's being bet and I just think it's good value. And I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I'll do 4,000 to win 1,000 on no Patrick Mahomes touchdown. Now that would have to be him running one in or catching one. It's not him passing a touchdown, obviously.
Right. Right.
It's no touchdown that he personally scores.
And I'll do
4,000 to win 1,000.
Right.
Hey, you never know. The gaming hearings we've ended up in after the Super Bowl, you wouldn't even believe them if I told you.
I like his pick of Byron Pringle under 18 and a half receiving yards. So I'm going to do that three dimes. So I'm going to do 3,300 to win three dimes on Pringle under 18 and a half receiving yards. He says that Pringle only has one catch all season when Sammy Watkins has been active. So Watkins figures to be active. So we'll do under 18 and a half.
Yeah, I would think certainly it sounds like all these guys that all those key guys that missed the conference championship games will be back for the Super Bowl. So that's very good news for sure. But that's just those two for me right now. Okay. I'll look to follow up with the Prince. Hopefully he lives up to his rather lofty nickname this weekend. And if I see anything on the side or total, I don't like anything right now, but that doesn't mean that I won't like anything 3 days from now. You never know.
I'm going to do one more Barnwell one, then I'm going to do a couple of my own. So I got I like Sammy Watkins 200-1 to win the MVP. So I'll put 300 on that one.
That might wipe me out.
That might decide the so that's Watkins at 200-1. Yeah. It's not going to set me back at 300. So the ones I like that I touted, so Brady's first touchdown pass under 12 and a half yards. I know you guys were a little lower at 10 and a half. So I'm going to do that for a two dimes, Brady under 12 and a half for his first touchdown. We talked about it earlier with Barnwell's 18 of his 47 TD passes were 13 or more. So although his arm is lived up a little bit in the postseason, I still like that. And then will the game be tied after 0-0? And I do like the yes. So I'll do 2,600. I'll do 1,300 to win one dime at yes and minus 130. So yes on a tie.
Someday I'll tell you the story of the gaming hearing that was about that prop where the gentleman argued that
before the
extra point. I'm sorry. That was, yeah, it was just the gaming hearings we've gotten into, or we had one where a guy argued that it was a lead change when it went from like 0-0 to 7-0 or whatever. It's just, yeah. You know, you try to dumb these things down as much as you can. And eventually, inevitably there is at least one dispute. I'm sure there will be this week too, but we're doing everything we can to keep our guests safe this weekend, number one, and to spell out the rules as clearly as possible, number two. So hopefully we'll have a successful, boring Super Bowl.
One more play.
I'll do
a nickel. Will the game be tied after the first quarter plus 430?
Okay. You're going to need Darren to take care of all this because I don't want.
How much action have you taken on the upright or field goal doink prop?
No, we don't. We don't do that one.
Oh, you didn't do that. Okay.
No. We get killed on. Will they miss an extra point? I don't have that one in front of me right now, but people love to bet that one. Yes, will there be a missed extra point? That's become in the last few years one of the most popular props.
Sure, the extra distance since 2015.
But that's missing it. That's missing it anyway. You don't necessarily have to hit the post. Right. Just any kind of a miss is a miss there.
All right, my man. Well, great stuff as always. I'm sure we'll stay tuned to Twitter for some Prince of Props picks, but it's been a good run. We have a nice card here for now. We're probably each going to add some stuff to that one.
I'll definitely add, and I think this is setting up to be a very, very entertaining Super Bowl with a lot of really high-profile players, which is great for prop betting, great for our side of the counter. So we are excited about it.
What we could have done is just you and I each pick 50 squares. And done that and seen if that plays out too. That would have been a nice little cherry on top.
That would have been a very entertaining listen for the listeners too.
Well, yeah, it would have to happen off screen. Right. Yeah, that would be not good to you.
Okay,
not good audio.
Yeah.
All right, we got the one, three to the left. And yeah. All right, bud. Well, enjoy the game. Best of luck this weekend. As you alluded to just a moment ago, stay safe. And we'll see how it all plays out.
My man, I'll talk to you next week, Doug.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, that wraps up the Bonanza and also this podcast. Thanks to John Murray, as always, and Bill Barnwell, just loaded with information and knowledge. And so I could talk to him for hours, as I'm sure all you guys can as well. Listen, the guy is just full of information. So go check out his column if you haven't already. Check out his podcast, The Bill Barnwell Show. Special thanks to Pablo Torre also this week for hosting me on ESPN Daily. And You know, I didn't really break down my pick on the game. I am on KC minus three. Don't love it, but I do like it. I think the Chiefs, I kind of agreed with Barnwell, so I apologize if I didn't elaborate earlier, but I just think the Chiefs' best, if they play remotely close to their best, no one can hang with them in the NFL. And obviously, we don't, that's the one game nature of this playoff format versus like maybe the NBA playoffs or NHL playoffs. There's no guarantee they'll be close to it. And obviously, the Tampa Bay defense can have a say or two in that. But I think if the Chiefs play remotely close to their best, no one can hang. So I'll lay the three with the Chiefs. I think they take care of business. And in my predictions for ESPN.com and some other publications, I had to pick a score. So I went 28-24. So I guess that would lean under as well. I know that's not really a huge limb there, but I'm obviously invested in some prop bets that I posted. Go check it out. We have tons of picks, by the way, on ESPN.com's chalk section. A huge, we actually have a Super Bowl page betting for Super Bowl. So go check out tons of information. Mike Clay does a wonderful job on there as well, and all the rest of the crew on chalk as well. Preston, Anita, Joe, and Tyler. So go check that out. And thanks to everyone as we put a bow on this season that we played every single game. So congrats to the NFL, and thank you all, and enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday.